Blog Talk Radio.
We'd like to welcome you to Africa on the Move with Brother African. Tonight we have a live hot show in which we're going to be dealing with the new Jim Crow laws and its implication to our people inside of the U.S. SNCS of America. Our guests tonight will be Brother Mike and Sister Kit, and they will give their perspective on the new Jim Crow laws. So, Brother McHale, will you introduce yourself to our audience? Welcome to African on the Move.
Peace. This is Brother McHale, and it's good to be on the show with Brother African and Sister Kit. As you were saying, my name is Brother McHale. I do a little music under Nation Records, Inc., my own company, and I'm also associated with a fantastic organization called Missing Pages of History Incorporated. And I'm glad to join you tonight to discuss some current issues that have their roots a long way back in time.
Okay, and also we have with us right now, Sister Kit. We'd like to welcome you to Africa on the Move. Tell us a little something about you, Sister Kit.
Yeah, I'm currently in Richmond, Virginia, but I live normally in Denmark, in Europe, and I've been visiting the United States quite a few times, and I'm a human rights activist. I'm interested in political prisoners and all the things that are connected to human rights.
All right, Brother McHale, Sister Kit, let's speak truth to power. Let's go directly to the source. I'm in the seat, and I'll take the heat tonight. I'll define it, and I'll stand behind it. Today, we are living in a new form of what we call the Jim Crow laws. When we look at this whole issue of incarceration of people of color, particularly African people, there seems to be in the society that the establishments are coming up with all kinds of new rules and policies to ensure that people can never integrate back into the society. Sister Kit, can you give us some ideas in terms of some of these new policies that are taking place as it affects those who have been incarcerated, particularly people of color, and how these laws are a manifestation of a new version of Jim Crow laws? Sister Kit.
Yeah, there are two great women who's been talking about the prison system. One is Angela Davis. She was in prison herself for 4 years, and she's been writing about the prison industrial complex for years. And she's been talking about how money influences the prison system, how people have actually been able to make money out of prisoners, and there's a lot of different ways to make money out of prisons. You can have private prisons, and you can have detention centers, and sometimes it's former judges that actually have shares in those kind of facilities. The prisons also create jobs. So when the industrial jobs were lost in the 70s, they built prisons instead, and those who work there have good and steady jobs. And the rate of incarcerated have been rising for years since the 70s, and so now the United States has the highest prison population in the world. I mean, there's so many people incarcerated in the U.S., much more than in any other country in the world.
Okay, Brother McHale, can you give us a take on some of the rules and policies that people who have been incarcerated will face once they come out of these dungeons? And as we say, these are the new versions of Jim Crow. What are some of the rules that have been created to maintain these individuals to not to be able to integrate into this society?
Well, it's an old story, and it's just a continuing story. If we just begin with the incarceration of the African as a slave to do the labor here in the new United States during its formation, it was very important to keep a large African population under control. And that meant controlling where they went and what they learned, what they ate, just about every aspect. Upon the invention of new technology such as the cotton gin, that became an obsolete workforce. So now we have a situation where you have a large African population who's been deprived of basic humanity and has to survive some kind of way. So from slavery, we go to sharecropping. Then we go to the industrial age and the move north during the 40s and 50s into the urban centers of the north. And then you run into another problem. Technology comes into the play again. And that workforce, to a large degree, becomes obsolete again. So now what do you do with a population like that? You find ways to keep things under control. If you have limited resources in terms of jobs and job opportunities, then you must keep a portion of that for your own people. So what happened then, I observed this as a youth growing up in New York City, certain parts of the African population in the urban centers would be targeted for some kind of petty arrest. And once that began, you had a record. And by the time that you got that record, it would hamper you even further in obtaining gainful employment. There used to be a time when the prison system considered itself a rehabilitation system, but that's something that was over at by the end of the 70s. And what it becomes now is a chance for the 1%, as they say, to maintain that control, to keep a large population basically nearly helpless and dependent on whether it's a welfare check or minimal employment through this prison industrial complex system. When you're in the prison system, if you work, you're not getting a minimum wage. You're getting as low as 2 cents, maybe 50 cents, maybe a dollar or two per hour. Are you picking up a skill that you can translate into work once you get out? Not really, because as you fill out the applications in most states, you're required to put down if you're a convicted felon or not. And once the employer sees that mark on the employment application, it's going to 9 times out of 10 end up in the trash. And that pretty much leaves us where we are today. Large populations with a very poor education opportunity and very poor opportunities for gainful employment and being marked as a criminal in the media and on their personal record.
You know, Brother McHale, Sister Kit, there's a saying that criminals are not born. They are created. Society create criminals. And as a result of the social factors that create this attitude of criminality, many individuals become victims of it. And once they become a victim of it, they seem to fall in a trap. Of inevitability of not being able to get out that label. You know, historically, I always say we are dealing with the same flavor, but just with a different label. When we talk about this Jim Crow law and looking at this question of incarceration, one of the things I have noticed is that once you have been incarcerated for anything, any manner, so-called illusion of crime, you are in trouble. You are in trouble because of the fact they have laws today, once you have been incarcerated, this gives employers a reason and a means to not to employ you. I thought once you do your time, that you should be given a free and fair opportunity to be able to participate in the society. If you have been incarcerated, we even now have the federal government participate in new Jim Crow laws, such as they cannot acquire federal housing. What are they really saying to the people when the state itself sponsor policies that if anyone has ever been incriminated, they cannot have federal housing? what are they saying to the people, Sister Kit and Mike? I want Kit respond first to that, then Mike. When the state find policies where if you've been incarcerated, you can't get public housing. Do people really understand the implication of that? Can you speak to that, Kit?
Yeah, there's another great woman who's been writing about this. Is a lawyer, civil rights lawyer called Michelle Alexander. She's written the book. It's called The New Jim Crow. And when she was working within the justice system, she found out that once you're a felon, that means you have been convicted for something, you are actually shunned from society. There are lots of things that you can't do. For one thing, it's hard to get a job once you have been convicted, but you can not live a normal life anymore. In some states, you can't even get food stamps, and you're not able to live with your family because...
Can you repeat again? You said some states you can't get food stamps? I thought that was a basic
necessity
for human beings, so you'd be able to eat.
Yeah, that's true. It differs from state to state, but in some states you can't get food stamps if you're a felon. And maybe you can't live with your family because they live in a project and you're not allowed to live in public housing. So it makes life very, very difficult. And that's for life. I mean, if you have a conviction, you do your time in prison, but afterwards, you're not able to live a normal life, and you're not able to vote anymore. So, what does that make you? Does it make you less than human or not a citizen because you have conviction? Another. You can see it as another way of not being a part of a society anymore, not being a part of where you live, and you have very few options to live and to make a living anywhere.
Brother Mike, would you like to respond to the question of what are they saying to the people? When the federal government is making policies that people cannot be entitled to or have access to public housing, and businesses can discriminate against you just off the basis of you being incarcerated, how does that take away one passage to reform? I mean, what are they really saying to you with these kind of new Jim Crow laws? Go ahead, Brother McHale.
Okay. Well, as I said before, this is nothing really new. Whether it's federal, state, or city, law enforcement is trained to be able to identify certain members of the population that are entitled, as far as they're concerned, to nothing more than incarceration. The opportunities for crime are presented to them from the beginning of their lives. The education that they're getting is substandard. By the time they're reaching ninth or tenth grade, the student themselves have already realized that they'll never achieve a high school diploma. And in the current environment, a high school diploma is not going to get you very far anyway. So what is the alternative? Well, you have the military, if you don't mind flying off to another country and risking your life. Other than that, what else? There's the local scene of crime. Very easiest one for most of these youth in the inner cities is the drug gang. It's very risky. You can start on a small scale, but you're guaranteed within a short period of time to end up in the city prison system. And after a while, you'll end up in the federal, not so much the federal, but at least the state level of incarceration. And with those marks, you're almost guaranteed to never have a real job. If you're fortunate enough to have some training in construction and the union in the city that you're currently living is able to get you employment, there's your next chance. But other than that, if you get laid off and if you have a family to support, what do? When you're hungry or when you have to pay a rent, if you have to support your children, take care of your family, you're going to do whatever it takes to keep your head above water. So obviously you're going to go right back to the criminal activity. And that's another opportunity for you to be reincarcerated. When it comes to housing, they make that even more hard. Now you're not allowed to live in public housing. You're not allowed to, maybe in certain states, to vote. So you have no say on what happens to your people in your situation next. And it just becomes a repeating cycle. Fortunately for some folks, they understand what is happening to them, and usually this happens on the state or federal level of incarceration, and they take another turn with the consciousness that this experience that they've been having has been planned and has been executed against them with great extreme prejudice. So they may continue their education on their own, and they may be able to employ themselves or work with others to employ themselves. But other than that, it's the odds are just very much against you. As a young man growing up, you found that the police could identify you by your clothing, your condition of your appearance, by the way you spoke, and they would treat you accordingly. The ones who were identified as being from, let's say, a poverty background, were going to be treated very harshly and would probably be arrested. Even if you were not actually involved in any crime, just to be in certain areas when a crime occurred would have you swept up and taken in to be fingerprinted, mugshot, and participate in a lineup. And if you were identified or misidentified, again, you're right back in the prison system. You're getting a start. And it serves the larger population to a certain degree, because now there's less competition for maybe even the few jobs that are out there. So with that situation, it becomes an almost endless cycle of failure and incarceration.
Okay, Brother McKay, on that note, to our audience, we're going to take a pause, a 30-second pause for the calls, and we'll be back with our guest, Brother McKay. And Sister Kit, where we're discussing the new Jim Crow laws. And we're going to invite our audience to call in at 323-679-0841. That's 323-679-0841. But right now, we're going to take a 30-second break, dealing with our pause for calls. We are back with Brother African dealing with this question of new Jim Crow laws. We said earlier we would actually have a caller call in. I think we have a caller right now who would like to express their opinion on the subject tonight. We're going to bring a caller in. Caller, welcome to Africa on the Move. What is your contribution that you would like to make to the subject area tonight, caller?
Yes, I'd like to ask your guests. This issue around the attempt at disenfranchisement when it comes to voting in America, it seems to me that if in fact a democracy exists, the last thing you want to do is to disempower your citizens in terms of their ability to vote. But there seems to be a renewed push to deny, in particular, poor people the right to vote. I just wonder what your guest view around the question in terms of disenfranchisement as it sweeps throughout this country.
Let's go with Kit first, then Brother McHale. Sister Kit, he's speaking to the issue of disenfranchised people of color as related to this prison thing.
Yeah, there's a lot of people in the United States that they don't vote, either because they are not registered to vote, or either because they are not interested in voting, or either because they cannot vote. And there are so many people in the United States that are not allowed to vote. just look at the numbers. There are 4 million people in the prison system, and they're not allowed to vote. They're either in prison or they are on probation or on parole or in jail waiting for a conviction, and all those people are not they're not allowed to vote. And it goes on after they have come out of prison, they are still not allowed to vote. And that's the large numbers. And when you go in a prison, if you see old movies from the 70s, you see a lot of different people. You see white people, you see black people. But when you go into a prison today, you see black faces. And 80% of the prison population is black or Latino. And if you see a visiting room, you'll see there are, you know, between 30, 40 prisoners, you may see two, and one of them is definitely white, and the other one is, or you don't know what he is, maybe he's Latino. So the vast majority of the prison population is black today. So your next question will be, why is that? This Michelle Alexander says is a new way of racial discrimination because, I thought that the racial discrimination ceased. It came to an end after after Martin Luther King and after segregation ended, but this is a new way of segregation, a new way of discriminating people. And in most cities, they have a policy. The police has a policy. It's called stop and frisk, and means you go to mostly young people, and you stop them and you search them to see if they have drugs or a weapon. And the people that are stopped by the police, they are, you know, they're all of them actually are young black or Latino youth.
Okay, we're going to stop right there, Sister Kit. Brother Mike, can we get a general response about this disenfranchisement of people of color as it relates to this issue of incarceration?
Well, as Sister Kit did just mentioned, this is primarily directed towards and affecting black and Latino youth. Again, you're looking at a long history of it. It's nothing new. Whether it's Jim Crow in 1920 or 1930, or even after the Civil Rights Movement, we see now you give people the right to go to a particular restaurant, but are they going to be is there any greater opportunity for employment? Certain legislation had been passed to enable or to pressure companies to give equal opportunity, and that made a difference. But again, if you want to maintain power and maintain control of the direction of your country, let's say the people who are currently in power want to maintain that power, then they have to do whatever is necessary to stop any opposition. And possibly the more easiest way to do that is to find ways around the laws that currently exist. So if you can give a person a criminal record and portray them on the media as criminals, as a people, as a race, or as a culture, then that gives you the freedom to speak as you want and to remain, at least in terms of the media, innocent of the blood on your hands. So when that person is who's in control can convince the population in general that this black and Latino population does not deserve to be anything more than a welfare recipient or an incarcerated population, and that they're dead weight, which is pretty much what you hear a lot of subtly sometimes through the media, then that maintains the current law status. If the people who are in the bad guy position, the black and Latino or Native American population are deprived of the ability to change any law, then they're only left with their operating outside of the system to survive or to improve their situation. So these new Jim Crow laws are not really new. It's just a new way of getting the same results, whether you were having to count beans or something to get into a poll or to prove that you can read and write to be able to vote in the South prior to the Civil Rights Law, or whether you're marked as a felon in 1983 or 1993 or 2012. It reached the same results.
Okay, to our caller, is there anything else you want to say? I'll give you about 1 minute that you'd like to contribute to this discussion.
No, the only thing I would, a quick question to Sister Kit. What is the perception of Europeans in terms of the kind of things that are taking place in America?
All right, call on a note. We would like to thank you, and we'll let Sister Kit respond to that.
Well, I don't think they really know what is happening in the European countries. The relationship between Europe and the United States and is kind of tricky, because as a European, when you go to the United States or when you see movies, you see television from the United States, you think it's almost like in Europe, and it isn't. It's very different. Because the United States used to be colonies, and the whole population is at some point immigrated to the United States. And what you see in television and movies is primarily the European population, and you think if you're European, oh, well, that's the same. But what you don't see is that a large part of the population is actually not white. They are black or Latinos or Native Americans or maybe Chinese or Asians, or, you know, there's so many different people in the United States, and this is not reflected in the media. It's not reflected in movies. It's not seen in Europe. So I don't think people really know what is happening in the United States. What you see in Europe is the presidential campaign over and over again. And those are just two men that are not really representing the people that live in the United States.
Okay, to both of our guests, we have about 30 seconds apiece. I'd like to for y'all to make a closing statement on this particular subject. Brother McHale.
Okay. We've discussed quite a bit. There's a history to this. There's a reason for what we're seeing. I guess another reason that most of the world is unaware, and probably a great deal of America is unaware, is, as we were talking earlier, the media. The media coverage is controlled and presents very limited and a very narrow viewpoint, a very slanted viewpoint of the lives of those populations that we're discussing, African Americans and Latinos and Native Americans primarily. Most of these other groups can achieve, all the groups can achieve a kind of an honorary white status, so to speak, if they are able to get the proper education and are assimilated enough to fit in. We have a African-American president, and he's well-respected in a certain degree because of his education and his ability to fit in.
If those folks aren't able to fit in, they
lose out.
20 seconds of the kid, just a response, closing statement. Give us something, closing statement. 20-second kid.
Well, oh yeah, 20 seconds. Tell me what you want me to close with.
Well, Well, we like to thank our audience for listening on this particular topic, the New Jim Crow laws. And until next time, we want you don't fall for the trick bag. And I think one of the things undermining this whole program is many of the judges own these private prisons. So there's a motive to incarcerate and get these people to come back. On that note, we'd like to bring thanks Sister Kit, Brother McKay for this program. Until next time, let's grab the Go Forward album, Backwards Never. Thank you for listening to Africa on the Move with your host, Brother African on the Move.